Luke chapter 12. Mike read to you this story this morning. It's a wonderful story. I borrowed the title from a man that I thought illustrated. I always read lots of things. And I borrowed this title because I thought it sure illustrated the truth in a few words. The farm that owned a fool. The farm that owned a fool. We'll read the lesson here in a little bit. I suppose all of us have perhaps or probably read stories about individuals who are absent-minded. Maybe you are one of those who would say, "Pastor, I'm a candidate to have my name added to that list for sure." Some of the stories about being absent-minded are funny. Sometimes they can have far-reaching consequences. I heard the story of a professor that was walking across a college campus. He stopped a student and he said, "Young man, am I going north or south?" And the student said, "Why, professor, you're going north. You're walking north." And he said, "Wonderful. That means I've already had lunch." Now, the good thing about absent-mindedness is that sometimes, as I stated, it can be humorous. I read another story this week about, as it fits in here, a professor and his wife that taught on a college campus, and he was noted for his absent-mindedness. One morning when he came down to breakfast, his wife said, "Now, dear, don't forget, this is moving day." They were moving to a larger home just a couple blocks away because their family was growing. And they were moving that day while he was at work. The workers were coming, going to pack up the house and move them that day. She said, "Now, don't forget, don't come home here tonight after work. Go to our new home. You'll be sure to remember that." Oh, yes, he surely would. She put a note in his lunchbox, "Go to our new home." Yes, he surely would do that. But 5 o'clock came, true to form. In vain, when he left the campus, he absent-mindedly drove right to his old house. He put the key in the lock and entered and saw everything was gone. It was bare. Furniture, curtains, clothes from the closet. At first, he panicked. He thought his family had abandoned him for some reason and not told him. Or there had been some sort of foul play. But about 10 minutes later, as he's wandering around the house, it dawned on him. Oh man, this was moving day. This was the day that the family was moving. The movers had come. But then, struck him again, where did we move to? He didn't know. So he ran outside. He saw a little boy riding down the sidewalk on his tricycle in front of the house, and he flagged him down. He said, little boy, do you know the family that used to live here? Do you know where they moved?" And the little boy got a pained look on his face, and he said, "Ah, Dad, Ma said you would forget." Now, you and I can relate to a lot of stories about being absent-minded. But the story this morning is really a serious one because it's not about a guy being absent-minded. It's about a guy being selfishly, sinfully minded. Mike read it to us. The ground of a certain man brought a good crop, bumper crop, we might say. And he thought to himself, "What am I going to do? I've got it. This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my corn cribs and my granaries, and I'll build bigger ones. And I'll have a supply that's going to last me for years to come. And I can just kick back, take it easy." But God said to him, "You fool, wouldn't you hate to have the Lord address you like that?" I always pray God can look at me and address me, "My son," or "My daughter," as the case may be. But to have God look at you and say, "You fool," would be probably the worst pronunciation that I could ever hear from the lips of God. Now, if you look back a couple of verses from what was read to us, you'll see that Jesus told this parable for a reason, as he did all of his parables. He shared it as a way of dealing with a particular issue that was at that time. And the previous things that are going on here in chapter 12 are a warning against hypocrisy. He's talking about the things that we say in private are going to be revealed, and the things that we do in secret, they're going to be made public. And there's some very serious stuff going on here in chapter 12 leading up to these verses. And then he talks about the fact of acknowledging Him, living openly for Him without shame, and standing up for Him, taking our stand for God wherever we're at. And then while he's delivering this powerful message, a guy raises his hand out there in the congregation and says, question, would you make my brother divide his inheritance with me? It's totally irrelevant to what Jesus is talking about. It doesn't have a thing to do with the things that he's warning about. And the Lord looks at him and says, I've got a story for you. And then he gives this parable that follows there. The story is given in relationship to a man who has a selfish concern. Now, you might say, Pastor, I don't think I'm selfish. But if you're honest, you'd have to say, every one of us would have to say, yes, there's a lot of times when I'm pretty selfish. There's a lot of times when I think of myself before I think of others. I try not to. I don't want to be known as somebody that thinks of myself. But, oh boy, can I get on a pout when I don't get my own way? I've known some adults that can pout every bit as much, if not more, than children. Have you? Forbid that you would be one of those. But I've seen sometimes when we don't get our own way, we can just have a fit. We can go on a pout. We're a lot more selfish than what we think we are. And so this lesson this morning is for you. And you might say, well, it's not really for me because I'm not rich. This is about a rich man. You're a lot wealthier than what you think you are or what you might know that you are. If you live here in America and you have a roof over your head, if you have any change at all in your pocketbook, or if you have a bank account at all, if you have any money in loose change in your home, if you have food in your closet or in your cabinet when you go home, you're wealthier than millions and millions and millions and millions of people of the world. So in a sense, this is about you and me. We're rich. We're rich. Even by the world's standards, we're millionaires, even though here we might just be average in our income or average in our disposal. Now, this man hollered out. He showed by his question that he had a passion for possessions. This man, would you? Here's Jesus preaching his heart out. And the guy said, would you make my brother divide the inheritance with me? He showed where his thoughts were. They weren't on the message. It's easy to sit in church and lose your train of thought. Now, I sit down there a lot, so I know. No matter how good a preacher you have up here, and we have one of the best in the land in our pastor, it's easy if you don't stay focused that you can be miles away. Or, at my age, you just drift off. I always pray, Lord, don't let me go to sleep standing up. I'll fall over. You can just drift off. Our bodies are tired. And so it's easy to just kind of drift off. But this morning now, I just want to challenge you about the farm that owned a fool. Now, also, not only are we more selfish than what we think we are sometimes, we're more greedy. You say, I don't like what you're telling. You're saying I'm greedy? Yep, I am. I'm saying I'm greedy. Every one of us is more greedy than what we like to think we are as well. We're more selfish and we're more greedy. And so this lesson comes right down to where we're going to talk about and to deal about with this morning. Jesus knows how greed can warp our minds and cause our ability to remember the important things that need to be remembered are forgotten. And the things that we do remember, we don't need to. That brings us to point number one. Today in this message, we're going to look at the things the farmer remembered, and then we're going to look at the things he forgot. Now, keep in mind, he's not absent-minded. He's selfish. He's sinfully minded. He's greedy. He's covetous. That's why he forgot. First of all, let's talk about the things he remembered before we talk about the things he forgot. What did he remember? Numero uno. That's what he remembered. He remembered himself. I don't think there's ever a speech so full of the first person singular on the soliloquy of this rich fool. If you read these verses, you'll see he said the word I 6 times and he used the words my or me 4 times. Just in that short little time. So self was certainly something that this foolish farmer easily recalled. For him, the purpose of having was not giving. It was self-gratification or self-indulgence. Did you get that? Do you use the things that God has given you for others, the benefit of others? Or do you use them for self-gratification or self-indulgence? This man clearly lets it be known that because God had blessed him, he was going to be self-indulgent. After all, it was his decision. It was his farm. It was his crops. It was his life. And nobody was going to tell him what to do with it. He was going to use it for himself. It's been said that one reason Jesus came into the world was to teach us to banish the words I and mine from life and substitute the words we and ours. Have you ever stopped for a moment? I'm sure you might not have. I don't know that I have. But I sometimes hear it when I'm talking to others. Have you ever noticed how much we use the word I, me, mine in our conversation? If you stop and count the number of times that you use the personal pronoun I, me, or mine, you'd be amazed at how much of your conversation revolves around yourself. Jesus tried to teach us different than that in the Lord's Prayer. There we don't see the word I ever appearing. He said, forgive us. Well, first of all, he starts out, it says, our Father, oh, you are. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Do you see the emphasis there? It's not on the individual. It's not wrong to ask for yourself. I'm not implying that if you ask for yourself. I've heard preachers say, I never ask anything for myself. I think to myself, well, then you've missed a lot of what the Lord taught us in there, because he teaches us to ask individually. But perhaps we need to focus more on saying we, ours, rather than me or mine. Now, there's the illustration of some ancient monks in the Egyptian desert who had a very wise custom. These guys who lived in a little monastery by themselves. The rule was that no monk could say, my book, my pen, my room. And to use any of those words were regarded as a crime for which they were disciplined if they used a personal pronoun. So often these days it's just the opposite. My plans, my house, my money, my life, my needs. A teacher once asked a little boy what part of speech my and mine were. And he said, I think they're aggressive pronouns. A lot of truth in that. Not possessive, but aggressive pronouns. And he wasn't far from the truth. So the first thing that this man remembered was himself. The second thing he remembered was this temporary world. This temporary world. He was so preoccupied with the things of this world that he forgot that there was another world, an eternal world. Someone once wisely said, this world is a bridge. The wise man will pass over it, but will not build his house upon it. In other words, this world is just a preparatory stage to another world. And the person who forgets this is very foolish indeed. So what this story is warning us about this morning is the danger of becoming preoccupied with temporal things and forgetting the eternal things. I'm sure you've heard this old illustration, Tolstoy. Tolstoy once told the story of a Russian peasant who was told by the king, he was being rewarded by the king, And the king told him, this peasant who had nothing, that he could have all of the land he could walk around in the time between sunup and sundown. He was to make a big circle. And all of the land that he could walk around from sunup to sundown in one day would be his. Oh, the peasant was overjoyed. He couldn't comprehend it. He took off going 60 miles an hour. By mid-morning, it seemed that he was moving too slowly, he thought to himself. So he increased his pace and he didn't even stop for lunch. As the afternoon heat beat down upon him, he hurried his pace even more. The sun was starting to sink. He felt that he simply must circle more and more land, and by late afternoon he was soaked with sweat from head to toe. He was exhausted from walking around this huge portion of land that was going to be his, but still he yearned for more. So he began to run. Breathlessly, he pushed himself into a fatigue that he had never known or experienced before. His heart beat wildly. The sundown was just a few minutes away, so he ran even faster. But as he raced toward the beginning point that would make him the largest landowner in the whole district, he fell to the ground dead. In his greed for more, he had pushed himself past the point of physical recovery, and his heart gave out. What a lesson. What a lesson. This reminds us of the old cliche about the man who loses his health trying to accumulate wealth, and then loses his wealth trying to get back his health. Proverbs 23:4 warns against that. Don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. Have wisdom to show restraint. Wise people will heed the warning in Proverbs when it says, Proverbs 11:4, your riches won't help you in the judgment day. Only righteousness counts then. So this farmer was plain stupid because he remembered the wrong things. He remembered only himself, and he remembered this temporary, transient, temporal world. And in his folly, he not only remembered the wrong things, he forgot the right things. What did he forget? He forgot his neighbors. If his barns were too small to hold his crop, there had to be a lot of people, needy people around him, that would have been only too glad to share in his surplus. If his barns were too full to hold his crop, there had to have been a lot of workers that had helped him in his field that he paid wages to, and he could have given them a big bonus. But he forgot his fellow man. He did. He forgot his fellow man. He forgot his neighbors. No moral obligation did he feel to help those with genuine needs. His was, I have it, I earned it, and I'm going to keep it. The great theologian, hymn writer John Wesley had a rule in his life that went like this. Earn all you can. Save all you can. Give all you can. When he was at Oxford University, he had an income of 30 pounds. Isn't much. It was kind of meager wages in those days. When he was at, he lived on 28 pounds and gave 2 pounds away. But then when his income increased as he matured, it increased from that 30 pounds to 60 pounds to 90 pounds to 120 pounds a year. He still lived on that 28 pounds. Gave the rest away. But this foolish farmer was not like John Wesley. Wesley's motto was, get all you can, give all you can. But this guy's motto was, get all you can all you get, sit on the lid, forget about the rest. So the first thing that he forgot, and he should have remembered, was his fellow man. That's why when I was preparing this message, I thought of Emily Allen. Every one of us should pray, Lord, would you have me to help her some each month? Remember those without Christ. We have so much. Second thing he forgot was he forgot the source of his real joy. His philosophy of happiness was to kick back and take it easy. If we make this mistake and connect enjoyment with ourselves, then we're all wrong. For real joy in life comes not when we hoard for ourselves, but when we give to others. It's like that old saying that says, those who bring sunshine into the lives of others cannot keep it from themselves. Giving and joy seem to be a package deal. This man had never read or absorbed the truth of Proverbs 19:17 that says, he or she who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord and will be rewarded for what he has done. Helping others is hard and often thankless work, but the Lord takes note of it. How grateful I am for that benevolent offering that you folks give. You help people every week that you'll never see. You entrust us pastors to help them. And every week we are able to measure out carefully and prayerfully money to help people that you will never see, but the Lord knows that you made it possible through your giving in that benevolent offering. I just thank you for that. Don't think that that's not a big thing. It's a big thing when somebody is sitting there and they're shivering and they got two little kids beside them and say, we slept in the car last night in the parking lot at Walmart, but this morning someone told us if we come down here, you might be able to help us. And to see the tears streaming down the cheeks of a mother that's running from her husband that's scared to death for herself, and to see those two little kids there, and you can say, through the goodness of God, we can't do a whole lot, but yeah, we can help you. It's 4:00. It's going to be dark pretty soon. You don't have to sleep in the car tonight. And to see the tears begin to flow from her eyes. And she'll say, I don't want to ask too much, but I don't even have formula for the baby. And then to say, I think we can even help with that. And we'll even be able to help you with some gas. Usually we can't help people beyond just one or two things, but when a mom comes in with little children, I tell you, those of you who give to that, you're helping people that you have no idea what a blessing that is. You're remembering beyond what you live on, people that you'll never see. But the Lord sees. He knows that though we administer it as pastors, it's not our money. Sometimes it's not anyway. But it's your money because you've given. And to have that mother then stand up and say, can I have a hug? Say, oh yes, we got those two. Godly, reverent ones. So, this is a challenge to all of us to remember that the real joy in life is giving. Giving, not getting. What else is here? Probably got more. He who she, I read this to you, but I'm going to say it again. He or she who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord. You ever thought about lending to the Lord? Kind of crazy, isn't it? It'd be like you and I saying to Bill Gates, do you need a loan? There's $20. Here's $50. Use it like you want to, Bill. And you know what I think if you did? I think he would say, thank you. That's very gracious of you. I will do something good with that. I believe he would. I don't think he would say, I got more money than you will ever know about. I think he would graciously say, thank you. I'll use that for some good for somebody. That's what you do. You say, are you trying to con us? No, not at all. I'm talking to myself as much as I am you. I'm telling you, I know the joy of giving, and it's the greatest joy in the world. Covetous men, John Trapp is quite a commentator. This, when we're covetous, we always want more. More. It's mine. Give me. Covetous men, John Trapp says, by gaping after more, lose the pleasure that they possess. As a dog at his master's table swalloweth the whole piece of meat he cast at him without any pleasure, gasping still for more. Have you ever had a dog? You toss him something, they go, mm-hmm, and you think, don't eat so fast. That's all you're getting. Have you ever seen an animal? They just, that's a dog's measure, just to gulp it down. Mm-hmm. We used to have a dog, man. You had to get your hand back. He'd take hand, meat and all. Mm-hmm. And just swallow it whole. And you think, you're a little pig, buddy. You're a little pig. But sometimes we resemble buddy more than we think. I could give you the illustration of Solomon. Wealthy man, had everything he needed, more than he needed. And then he said, that hasn't answered the issues of my life. Physical pleasures, scenic pleasures, possession, all of the things that I have, that's not where it's at. That's what Solomon said. The third good thing this farmer forgot was time. T-I-M-E. In verse, you see the mistake he made in presuming on the future? He said, I have plenty of goods laid up for many years. He thought that he had control over time. He thought, man, I'm set for the rest of my life. If I handle this right, I won't ever have to work again. Huh. There's an old story of three apprentice devils who were sent from hell to earth to serve their time. Before they left, they told Satan what they proposed to do to ruin mankind and to deceive them, to draw them away from God. The first little devil pumped himself up and he said, I'm going to tell everybody there is no God. But Satan said, that won't do it. Because in their hearts, they will know there is a God. It's bred into them. The second little devil said, well, I've got a better plan. I'll tell people there is no hell. And the chief devil said, that won't do it either, because people are afraid. They know, they might not like to admit it, but the vast majority of them believe that there's something they're going to have to face. And then the third devil stepped up and smiled and said, I've got it. Forget that no God business. Forget that no hell business. I'll tell people, there's no hurry. And Satan said, you've got the master plan. Make them think there's no hurry to get serious about dying. There's no hurry to get serious about giving. There's no hurry to get serious about living, because they will have many years to do that. Do you see how it fits into the story? Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. And Jesus, looking on, said, not so. You don't even have tomorrow, let alone many years, because you are going to be called into eternity tonight. Talk about an eye-opener. I'm always amazed at us old people. That's me. I'm old. Went to a doctor the other day, took some tests. He came back in and said, the results are in. I said, what are they? He said, you're old. I'm always amazed at us old people. I used to think when I was younger, why don't people that are in their 70s and 80s know they're going to die and get right with God? Why don't they ever think of that? I thought that a lot as a young pastor. I'd go to the hospital and people were laying there. How you doing? Oh, good. I'll be out here in a little, no time. I think, no, you're not. You're going to die. You're going to die. Can't you get that through your head? I don't know why we old people think we're always going to live another day. Another day. Dory gets after me once in a while. She says, you got a death wish? I said, no. It's called reality. I'm 76 years old. I'm 6 years past my 70. I could die at any second. And my precious godly wife, you know what she says? I'm not. Why don't old people never think they're going to die? I don't get it. But I do know why. Part of it is no hurry. Plenty of time. Plenty of time. Plenty of time. I want to tell you, you don't have plenty of time, even if you're 30, 40, 50. Jesus could come at any moment. And when He comes, time is no more. Time is past then. All the prayers you pray then are not going to do any good. Time is past. So, the last thing. I think I got five here. No, I guess I cut it off at four. You're glad, I'm sure. He forgot time. Number four, the last thing he forgot was God. Wow. Of all the things in the world, not to forget. But he said, my fruits, my barn. 1 Chronicles 29:12 says, wealth and honor come from you, O God. You are the ruler of all things. But this foolish farmer's first thought was not praise God for his blessings. He thought, I've got it made. The man was a fool. Listen, not because he was rich. It's no sin to be wealthy. Some of God's greatest servants, Old Testament, New Testament, and today are some of the wealthiest men on the earth. Did you know that? So it's not a sin to be rich. But this man was a fool because he lived without any awareness of and preparation for eternity. I think I put in your notes, he was a man who had dollars but no sense. S-E-N-S-E. Remember the words of Psalm 14:1? The fool says in his heart, there is no God. Remember, let me close this morning with a reminder to you. And this is personal, Al, because I don't see any sense of preaching the gospel if you don't appropriate it, and I don't appropriate it personally. But let me share with you right out of my heart. Wouldn't it have been a wonderful thing if this man who had these blessings, or if you and I, with all our blessings, said, I will not forget to tithe. God will have His share and more out of every blessing He gives me. I want to encourage you, if you're not a tithing person, and I don't know whether you are or not. I have no idea. Kathy knows, I guess. I don't know. She probably don't even know that, but she's the one that receives the money and counts it. I don't know if you're a tithing person or not, but can I challenge you? This is not a plea for your money. This is a plea for your passion for Christ. If you're not a tither, let me encourage you. Begin to tithe, and you will see God's blessing on the remaining 90% will go farther than the whole 100% under your own direction. It will. The tithe is the Lord's. And I've had people say, well, that's Old Testament. I want to ask you this question. Can you do less under grace than what you would do under law? Is grace cheaper? Come on. Is grace cheaper than law? Can you excuse yourself in grace? Because thou shalt not commit adultery is law. But does grace excuse me from keeping that commandment? Thou shalt not steal, that's law. Does grace excuse me from keeping that commandment? Can I tell you quite honestly and directly, if you have some picky-noony reason for not tithing, you better compare yourself to this person right here, because it's more about possessions than it is passion. I started tithing as a teenager. I'll never forget my first test. I had worked all summer to go back to college because I paid my own way through college. That and the scholarships I got. And I remember I had a pretty good chunk of money. I don't remember what it was. $1.80 an hour is big bucks. That's what you got in 1959 for driving truck. And I was so proud of that. And then I had another job after I got off that job that I used to live on. So all of this money was to go to school, pay my bill. And I'll never forget. I had all that money. I took it out of the place where I was keeping it, didn't put it in the bank. Who knows what those crooks would do with your money. But I had it, and I went to this church service, and then I was going to go the next day to college. I'm going to say it was like $1,800. I think that's what it was. I'm not sure, but I had like $1,800. My wallet was fat. And I was... That's the most money I'd ever had in my life. And it came time to take up the offering. And I felt like the Lord said, are you going to give me 10%? And I thought, $180? Do you know how long I worked for that? And it was a struggle. I didn't know it. I was going off to study for the ministry. There was a battle going on. Tithes or not? I need that money for school. I owe that and more besides. Are you going to tithe or not? Yes, Lord, I am. I'll be switched if I'm going to go off and study for the ministry and be a thief. Because the Bible says in Malachi, where do we rob God? In our tithes and in our offerings. So I went off to a corner and counted out $180. And I kept thinking all the time, how much that time that took to make that. And then when I got done, I still had my wallet open. And the Lord said, I didn't hear my voice, but the reason was, that's it? Man, he and I are just, I haven't known him that long, barely 2 weeks or three, that I gave my heart to Christ. And he says, that's it? And I thought, well, yeah, that's it. That's $180, big bucks right there. What about offering? I nearly had a stroke at 18 years of age. Nearly had a stroke. One more 20. I'm making sure there's not two there. And from that moment on, it's never been a question in my life whether I'm going to give tithes or offerings, because I made the decision that day. And God has blessed us. We're millionaires, as far as heaven's concerned. Not on earth. I don't know. I don't know if Dory's got any money squirreled away that I don't know about or not. I don't know. She might have. But I doubt it. But I'm telling you, if we lay up treasures for ourselves and are not rich toward God, the Bible says, you fool. And so you teenagers, you sub-teenagers, parents, teach your children to tithe from their allowance. You do that. A lot of you do that already. I know that. Teach your children to tithe from their allowance. I used to be amazed when I was director at youth camp up in Red Lodge, Montana. These ranch kids would come in there. And their dad and mom, usually ranchers are good businessmen or they don't last too long. And these little ranch kids would come up to youth camp. They'd open up their wallet. They'd have $100, $200 in there. And I'd say, you're going to lose that? What are you doing with all that money at youth camp? Cost 15 cents for a bottle of pop. What are you going to do with that? You know what? Those little rascals were smart. They would come in and break out a $10 bill and buy a pop and put their change in their pocket. And I'd see them putting in offerings throughout the week. And I'd see them. They were just wise. You know why? Because their parents had taught them. They had been taught the value of work, and they had been taught the value of how to handle their resources for God. And here you got a kid that's 11 years old, 13 years old, 15 years old, and they're tithing. Is it going to be a struggle? They're going to have a lot of other struggles in their life, but is it going to be one about giving God what's rightfully His if you teach that in the home? Mm-mm. And if you weasel out of that, you're neglecting a very important issue with your children. Remember one time I went to church? I had a dime. But a dime could buy a Frosty back then. This is a penny. And it came time for the offering, and I took that dime out. And this little boy said, "Don't be nuts. You won't get no Frosty. You put that in the collection, that's all you got." You're right. Back in my pocket it went. I went out of that church, walked about a block, and I thought to myself, I just robbed the Lord. I can't do that. I'm not going to do that. I think I was in the sixth grade and I hardly ever went to church, but I had this conviction. And I went, told a story, went back and I went up to the offering plate and the preacher looked at me and I said, "I forgot to put that in this morning." Which was only partly true. I had remembered the wrong things. Forgot the right thing. Well, I close with this. 2 minutes, and I'll be done. The rich man in the parable thought it was all for him. He said, "My crops, my barn, my goods, my soul." And then God said, "I got news for you. It's no longer about you, no longer about your crops, your barns, your goods. Now it's about your soul. And you're bankrupt." Spurgeon said this: "Many people have asked for blessings simply to satisfy the lust of their own hearts. Full stomachs have often led to a thirst for more and a wanton disregard for godliness. When we have plenty," last sentence, "when we have plenty of God's providential blessings, we often have little regard for God's grace, which leads to very little gratitude for the blessings we have received. When we are full, we forget God. Thus, being satisfied with earth, we are content to do without heaven. Rest assured, it is harder to know how to be well fed than it is to know how to be hungry, due to the intense propensity of our human nature toward pride and forgetfulness of God." Lowell Mason, the hymn writer, said, "Let not the gifts your love bestows estrange our hearts from you." Let's pray. With your heads bowed, I just want to ask you kindly in love this morning. This is an important biblical issue. Are you rich toward yourself, but skimping in your devotion to God? Do you have the idea, "That's my money? I earned that. Nobody did that but me." Are you backing up your faith with your pocketbook? Boy, it's easy to talk religion. It's harder when it comes to our wallets, because we always got a place for all of our money. Sometimes we don't have enough money, seems like. But I just want you to accept this in love from my heart this morning. If you're not tithing, put yourself in the pathway of God's blessing. For he says, I will open the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing that you won't be able to receive it. You'll be like that rich farmer. Not rich money-wise, but I'll bless you with my presence and with my peace and with my anointing. I'll bless you. Teenager, sometimes there's not enough money. Man, you just think, oh, I don't have any money at all. Now you're talking about giving half of that away or part of that away? No, just tithe and your offering. Lord, teach us to pray. Teach us to tithe. Teach us to never forget that the things of this earth are going to burn up. No matter how beautiful they are, the only place that we can place our treasure where it's not going to pass away is in heaven, through souls and through giving. Seal these words to our hearts. In Jesus' name. Anyone here this morning without Jesus? Say, I'd like to receive him, Pastor. God bless you. You are dismissed.